This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Monday, the 7th of April. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. President Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday responded to questions around the sustainability of the Government of National Unity while he was doing a tour of Klipspruit in Soweto. Ramaphosa said business will not make decisions in government or in the ANC. He was responding to questions around a letter that business had sent to both himself and to Democratic Alliance leader John Steenhuisen.
A number of business people have written a letter to both myself and John Steenhuisen, the leader of the Democratic Alliance. And I can say that business does not dictate what happens. One in government does not dictate what happens in the ANC that I lead. We take our own decisions based on our considerations of everything that will advance the interests of our people. But of course, like any other citizen, they are entitled, as any citizen is entitled, to express their views, their wishes, and their fears. And all of us here as South Africans, we have views and fears and aspirations. So they too are entitled to do so. But in the end, I want it to be clear that the ANC will not be influenced by what business says. We are principally influenced by what our people say. And so we are not under pressure from business or whoever. If we are under any pressure, it is pressure that comes from our people and our people as a whole, not only ANC members. And the pressure that comes from our people is about poverty, it's about inequality and unemployment. And those are the issues that influence our decisions. And so therefore we have to heed what our people are saying. As regards what is happening in the United States, we have noted and we have seen some of those demonstrations, and these are matters that are happening in the United States, and we will therefore not be opining on what happens in other countries, as we don't believe that it's correct for anybody to be opining on what happens in our own country, because we don't want to interfere in what is happening in other countries. They are a sovereign country and they must deal with their own challenges as we deal with our own challenges.
Meanwhile, what is clear is that tensions between the ANC and the Democratic Alliance continue to dramatically escalate. Here's ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula at the funeral of Itumeleng Kotswane addressing the media, and he was also asked about the future of the Government of National Unity.
The ANC believes in the Government of National Unity in terms of working to ensure that the GNU as a concept we have actually framed, we do succeed by making it a point that the GNU is intact going forward. So the mistake of many people is to think the GNU is if the DA depart, the GNU collapses. The GNU, has, in terms of its makeup, it might have two protagonists in the ANC and the DA, but it has got other political parties in it. As it has been demonstrated in the last vote that took place, that things are not dependent on the Democratic Alliance. Political parties have decided to show their mettle and work for patriotism and unity of South Africa. It does not mean that those parties agree with VAT, like even ourselves, but we're finding each other when it comes to the question of working for South Africa and the stability of our nation. We don't want, when we wake up tomorrow, South Africa is something that we can compare to other countries simply because of our ineptness or our reckless actions. The DA, unfortunately, it will work for political scoring at all costs. They are selfish, they are about themselves, they are not about the country. if opportunity provide for them to be in our position of 40%, I don't know what they will do with it. The ANC with this 40% could have chosen this and that party. We said for national interest and for the interest of our people, we choose the GNU to work with everybody. Others came with redliners, including the DA. We said no. But it is quite funny, very funny, that when it is convenient, they work with the MK party and EFF.
I'm sure many of you are also receiving notices from the retail community alerting you to the VAT increase from the 1st of May. The Democratic Alliance, however, filed papers in the Western Cape High Court last week to stop Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana from increasing the VAT rate. Here's Democratic Alliance Federal Chair Helen Ziller.
If every parliamentarian had done their job, we would have managed to work this issue through parliamentary processes that did not require us to be taking our fallback position, which is going to court. The DA never only has one plan. We have a whole series of plans, and we are absolutely determined that we are going to succeed in our plan to stop VAT on the 1st of May, as announced by the Minister, Enoch Godongwana. All of those people who are under the mistaken illusion that Action South Africa has stopped that are just that, deluded. Because, in fact, the fiscal framework as passed by Parliament on Wednesday, that was yesterday, that fiscal framework includes a VAT increase, and the notice put out by Parliament itself said that that VAT increase would come into effect on the 1st of May. So if Action South Africa still believes that they've stopped it, they are living in cloud cuckoo land. The DA, on the other hand, had, after weeks and weeks of negotiation, put on the table a package of economic reforms that would have enabled our economy to grow and create jobs and enable the government to increase its tax package by having far more people employed. Also, to ensure that all the barriers to investment and growth, or in at least the major ones, are withdrawn. That was the DA's plan. And in fact, we came within a whisker of achieving that until the point where the smaller parties, who all promised to be in opposition to the ANC and rejected this government of national unity when we set it up under very difficult circumstances, then jumped ship and allowed the ANC to increase your VAT without any conditions whatsoever. And so we're not going to sit there and allow that to happen. We are not in the GNU for blue lights or cars or ministerial homes or status. We are in that GNU for one sole purpose, and that is to get South Africa's economy to grow at the rate it needs to grow in order to absorb more people into productive employment and thereby reduce poverty. That is why we are here. And we are not going to play any games that enable the ANC to retain its profligate spending, its extreme wastage, not even do a spending review of, for example, ghost employees in the system, but just continue taxing South Africans till they cannot even put food on the table, as my colleague Karabo so eloquently said a moment ago. So our plan B is to take this to court. Our plan B is very strong and solid. This morning I signed these papers. These are crucial papers that are going to really change the face of how these decisions are taken in Parliament and change the decision to increase your VAT. It will ensure that we prevent that. And these papers have two parts. The first is to get the process on the 1st of April that transpired in the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Finance declared null and void because they were unprocedural. Therefore, to set aside any decision they took. And the second part of Part A is to interdict a VAT increase on the 1st of May. So that's an urgent case to interdict a VAT increase. The second part of these papers is to get Section 7.4 of the VAT Act declared unconstitutional because it gives the minister the power to enforce a VAT increase without taking it through Parliament and without the need to have the fiscal framework and other legislation required passed in Parliament. So it gives the minister legislative powers to pass laws simply by making a statement. And we know that that is unconstitutional, and we want the court to declare it now. So we feel we've got a very strong case in law. The DA has been around the block enough to know it never can predict the outcome of a court case, but this is as strong a case as you are likely to get. And this is our plan B. We were hoping, against hope, that we would be able to get the ANC to compromise, to act honourably. It didn't do that. Instead, it did some backroom deals with parties that are not even in the GNU and tried to trump us, and I use that word advisedly. And they are going to see what the outcome is of that, because we will push them back yet again in the interests of South Africans.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
The saga around US-South Africa relations continues. Now, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt is often interviewed by BizNews journalist Chris Stain on the BizNewsTV.platform. This weekend, Colonel Wyatt took to his platform to clarify the facts around what is now widely known as the Ronnie Jackson Bill, which has South Africa-US relations front and center. Jackson is the representative of the 13th District in Texas. Let's take a listen.
On February 6th of 2024, during the Biden administration, there was a bill put forward, which didn't go anywhere, but it's a bipartisan bill by Democrats and Republicans to reassess the relationship with South Africa, the bilateral diplomatic relationship, because South Africa was accused of harming U.S. national interests and our national security interests. Now, I've reported on this extensively. This has resurfaced. This time, it's a proposal by Representative Ronnie Jackson of Texas. Here's the resolution. It's 15 pages long. Last year's, as I recall, was just 6 pages. This one is 15 pages long. So that speaks volumes, folks, 15 pages. And the list of egregious offenses or allegations is much more extensive than what they had last year. And many of them come directly from the things I've reported on that are either in the press or that I was aware of and made you aware of. But now it's in this 15-page resolution, which could become a law. So this law calls for something that doesn't exist. We've already seen people from Stellenbosch University go on Newsroom Africa. We've already seen other people falsely claim in most of the media outlets in South Africa that the United States has applied sanctions to South Africa, complaining and misrepresenting their misinformation, intentional disinformation to distort the view of America, blaming America for sanctions, non-existent sanctions. The only action the U.S. government has taken vis-a-vis South Africa of late has been the executive order on, well, there's a fish jumping out of the water right there. That's why people are here fishing. The only action they've taken, just jumped up right out of the water. The only action they've taken, oh, there he goes again. Maybe he doesn't like what I've got to say. I stick my hand out and catch myself dinner. So the only thing that's done is Trump has put an executive order out on the 7th of February. And that executive order, what occurred in that executive order is Trump ceased all foreign assistance to South Africa. That's not a sanction. That's a gift that we give to South African country around the world. But all foreign aid was suspended on January 20th in executive order for 90 days. The South African politicians ran their mouth and complained about it. So Trump gave them what they were asking for, permanent end of foreign aid. That's a lot of money, about $500 million per year. But that's not a sanction. And the only other action was offering refugee status to Afrikaners, whatever those people will be determined by the State Department. That's it. No gray listing, no embargo, no trade bans, no sanctions of any sort whatsoever. But South African media, academics, and politicians initially, although it appears the politicians are backing off this story now and trying to play nice in negotiations and diplomatically, but still the media and academics are claiming falsely that the United States has applied sanctions to South Africa. This latest proposed law is giving them ammunition. Specifically, allow me to read it. To require a full review of the bilateral relationship between the United States and South Africa and identify South African government officials and ANC leaders, specifically to that party, not just officials, eligible for the imposition of sanctions and for other purposes. Now, there are no sanctions, but Ronnie Jackson is proposing consideration of sanctions against key officials who are harming South Africa and South Africans and the United States national interest, as well as ANC officials. There's a requirement for a report. 120 days after the date that this is enacted as law, the Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury shall submit the following: a list of senior South African government officials and ANC leaders the president determines have engaged in corruption or human rights abuses that would be sufficient, based on credible evidence, to meet the criteria for the imposition of sanctions pursuant to the authorities provided by the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act under U.S. Code 22, Section 10101. Wow. But that's a proposal. That's something going before the House of Representatives. It doesn't exist. It's not in law. So to date, there are no sanctions against South Africa. Yet, the actions and commentary coming out of South African officials from Ramaphosa down have been disheartening since this executive order was issued on the 7th of February, claiming the U.S. was attacking South Africa and abusing it. Also calling us racist, calling our president the leader of a global white supremacist movement. None of this is conducive to good diplomatic relations.
Trump tariffs continue to make headlines across the world. Our Bloomberg colleagues have more on the impact on Africa's poorest economies. Let's take a listen.
Walk us through what is going to be the likely impact on many of these nations, which tend to be lower income and poorer nations to begin with. How much of a toll are these higher tariff rates going to have on these economies?
Yes, it was alarming to see the sharp increase in the tariffs that the U.S. has imposed. You're right to say Lesotho, which is a small mountain kingdom, one of the poorest countries on the continent, has been slapped with a tariff of 50%. It appears as though the Trump administration gave the highest tariffs to countries that run trade surpluses with the United States. So basically, they export more to the U.S. than they import. And what's unfortunate is that a lot of these countries that are in this position are there because of policies advised by the U.S. administration. Lesotho, for instance, and Mauritius, which was slapped with a 40% tariff, export apparel to the United States, and that's under a duty-free access trade agreement they had with the U.S., which was the administration's way of trying to help these countries develop. Now it seems they're being penalized for doing so well on the export front.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it seems as though the Trump administration wants to come up with deals with various trading partners. What are the kind of deals that these nations can push for? Because they don't actually have a lot of bargaining power, economic leverage to begin with. So how are they planning on dealing with this?
That's a good question. So I can speak for bigger economies like South Africa, which will be impacted in terms of its automotive products as well as the agriculture industry. They're already talking about a delegation led by the trade minister that will be going to the United States to try and engage the U.S. administration to make concessions. In the case of South Africa, in terms of what they can bargain, as you're probably aware, Elon Musk is seeking to get his company Starlink to operate in the country, that's probably something they could consider. But for small countries, like you mentioned, like Lesotho, there's very little they can do. They can't suddenly push up their demands to erase that trade balance because consumption or purchasing power is very low in that country. It's a poor country, as I mentioned. So for small countries like Lesotho, we are concerned in terms of what it means for them going forward. It does imply that exports will fall substantially. Keep in mind, exports account for 10% of GDP. So that would be a significant hit to the country's income as well as to its currency. Yeah. And if foreign exchange inflows slow down, we are concerned about them meeting their foreign obligations.
Well, it promises to be an interesting time on the news front, and we'll continue to bring you context on both the local and international front. Tomorrow, Alec Hogg is back in the hot seat. Thanks, as always, for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.